All right. My name, like I said, was David Maclis. I live here in Raleigh. I grew up in Ohio and kind of ventured. Yeah, Buckeyes back there. Okay. All right. Where at? Where? Oh, did they? Okay. Where are you guys from in Ohio?
Youngstown.
Okay. So I grew up in a town called Medina. Medina, huh? Yeah. So ended up down here via Hawaii, actually, and didn't want to go back to Northeast Ohio, so we ended up here. And we've lived here since 83, I guess it's been. So we've been here for quite a while. I was raised Methodist. Most of the people that come to this center were brought up something other than Buddhist. So it's just kind of, and if you study that philosophy, it's really, it's not necessarily classified as religion. It's a philosophy, a science, and psychology. And if you study that, there's a lot of people that bring in other faiths and end up practicing this. The Dalai Lama says, you know, you don't practice Buddhism to become a Buddhist or be a better Buddhist. You practice Buddhism to become better at whatever you're already doing. So, and we'll kind of explore some of those ideas too as we kind of go through this. I've done meditation since I was very young. I just kind of got interested in it. Was always interested in Eastern thought. 60s and 70s came along, and what little I remember of it, there was a lot of meditation, and that whole thing kind of came up. And most of the Western monks and nuns now were hippies back in the 60s and 70s. And our teacher and some of the older teachers will talk about, you know, when they were in a monastery, all the hippies that came over and kind of began hanging out. So there's a lot of that still kind of carried through. We connected when we moved here. We connected to the Kadama Center about 2004 and have been coming ever since. Other stuff I do here is we also have a prison program. I teach at a prison, teach meditation. We call it stress management or anger management, building inner strength. There's other things that you can call it. But right now I'm doing some work at Dillon, which is a youth facility up in Butner, and go there once a week too. So, and then I actually have a job, so I live and work here in Raleigh. And my wife, a couple of children, assorted pets, that's kind of me. So I am going to, now this is the old go around the room, everybody introduce themselves. I won't remember a single name, but we'll do this anyway. And if you just tell me kind of what attracted you to this class, okay? And fortunately, we'll start over there. You guys can haggle over that. Yeah.
I'm Mike. This is my wife, Lisa. I've been here in Raleigh for 19 years now.
Oh, wow.
Love the area. We came here via California. I grew up in the Midwest. Didn't want to go back to that either, so I did on that. We both were raised in the Roman Catholic faith. Actually came here a couple of weeks ago as a kind of a cultural immersion field trip for a counseling class on faith. And just really liked the atmosphere. We had been having a little bit of conflict with our church where we're not living anymore. Kind of around what you were talking about, David, the whole idea of we're right and everybody else is wrong. It always kind of rubbed us the wrong way. Like that experience in the view of God and that concept and that dogma. I really hope this. We read the the three missions.
Mm-hmm.
Dalai Lama in the lobby there. It sounded very refreshing, that idea of respecting and, you know, accepting other religious faiths.
Yeah. Very good. All right. And for meditation, you're just interested in that aspect of it. Okay.
I don't ever sit still, so I
have to learn
to do that.
Okay. All right. Well, good. We'll see where that goes. I'm sorry.
And I've kind of been reading books for a few years now. Some of the Dalai Lama and some of the Shogun and some different. And even as John Kabat-Zinn does.
Mm-hmm.
Raleigh recently.
How good.
I was really interested in kind of pursuing the, and I have tried meditation a little bit on my own, but I usually don't last very long, and I tried to see how was the right way to do it.
Oh, good. Okay. I don't know about the right way, but we'll see what we can do. Teach some things there. I'm gonna go to the periphery, and we'll come back up here. So if you want to go ahead. There you go. Very good. Welcome.
I'm June. I've read a lot about Buddhism, the Tao, and Shintoism, and I just always really like the ideas of the Eastern religious, the calmness, the peace, non-judgment. I struggle with that in my brain.
Meditation
would help me a great deal.
Yeah, maybe. Very good. Welcome. Sir? Oh, that's right.
And we're visiting our daughter and son-in-law and three granddaughters that live in Durham. So we visit quite often back and forth. And we found Kadamba Center and we wanted to see, explore, and understand more about Buddhism.
Oh, good.
I've been reading a lot about Buddhism. We are Hindus by birth and practice. And then there's a lot of similarities from Hinduism to Buddhism. But there are some unique differences, and I like some of those approaches that are different and taking some of the essence out of some of the Hindu philosophy and then making it more, in my mind at least, make it more practical, usable
mm-hmm.
in today's world.
Okay.
And I've been reading a lot as well as watching some of the YouTube videos about
yeah.
The Buddhism in a nutshell back there.
Okay.
4 or 5 weeks. And on meditation, I've done off and on, but I would like to do more and practice more, and especially the breathing part of it.
Okay.
Because I have a special need for my lung issue.
Okay.
More in the breathing part.
All right. Well, hopefully this will help. So, and I guess Buddha was a Hindu, right?
Yes.
So, it's like Jesus was a Jew, so there's, yeah. So, okay, very good. Welcome. You know, I guess we'll wind our way back up. You get to go last. Ma'am?
I'm Jennifer.
Okay.
I do meditate a little bit at home, and I've been working with this kind of meditation, so I need to learn more about
it. Okay, very good. Welcome. That's good. All right. You got two good preliminaries. Who am I? And I want to be happy. And that's what everybody's asking, right? So, very good. Welcome.
I'm Casey. I'm from Buddhism. I'm a Baptist Christian. And so at first I was like, really worried about
All right. We'll see how it goes. Welcome.
Hi, so I'm Macy, and I'm also finishing a counseling degree at ECU. I change careers late in life, and I have 3 kids, and I have friends who come here that are Tibetan and Buddhist, and so I was just, you know, I've come one time before, and I was just interested in meditation.
Very good. Welcome. Let's see. All right. Do you want to?
I'm Drew, and I've always kind of been interested in meditation and tried the books and the tapes, and I was looking for something with a little more structure.
Okay.
And class of this one earlier this year, I believe, and I really enjoyed it, and so I've been watching for when it restarted.
Oh, good. Did Jill teach that one, or?
Actually,
I did? Okay. Well, you came back. That's a good sign. Huh? All right. Thanks.
I'm Marina. I've tried meditation on and off for 20 years.
Yeah.
Anywhere, so I hope that this one gets.
Well, don't be too disappointed. All right. We'll see. Welcome. Okay. All right. You can say ditto to whatever he says. That's easy.
I'm Tim. Michaela's my wife. She's not much of a doctor. actually came here after Tubman Chudron came here to talk.
Oh, yeah.
A while back and just had kind of seen her stuff online on the web and kind of rolled, you know, made my mind feel better. And so since then, been coming intermittently to the Kadapa Center and just sort of working my way through things. So check out meditation class.
All right. Very good. Welcome. And you want to go ahead?
I'm Lori. I've lived here in North Carolina. I moved from California back in 92 after that big earthquake.
Oh, wow.
In the past year, actually the past 3 years, I've gone through a lot of life changes. The stress levels in my life have been unreal. I don't want to go on vacation.
Okay.
I'd rather do meditation.
There you go. Yeah, it's a good alternative. Okay. Well, good. Welcome. See if you can do it for you. It all boils down to you doing it for you.
Hi, I'm Gabriella. I'm taking a world religion class, so we have to compare two religions that are outside of our own. And I'm Greek Orthodox Christian, so I'm looking at Hinduism and Buddhism. And I was just at the Hindu temple yesterday. It's beautiful. This is beautiful. So can't wait.
Oh, good. All right. Excellent. Yeah, this is all kind of, if you're not familiar with this stuff, I remember the first time I came, we started out in a basement down the street, and it was a small, we had probably 30 members. I think we're up to 300 or 400 now. So it's grown. It's actually, oddly enough, the largest, the last I heard it was the largest FPMT, which is a specific type of Buddhism center in the United States. Member-wise, which just kind of strikes me as odd being in Raleigh, North Carolina, kind of the heart of the Bible Belt here, you know, got this Buddhist center here. First time I came, though, I remember, you know, seeing this, and I started thinking of, like, Chinese restaurants and stuff. There's a lot of glitter and lights and, you know, kind of interesting things. And that there's a lot of ritual here, too. So, interestingly, I suppose a lot of religions have a lot of ritual. I know my wife was raised Catholic, and you know there's a lot of ritual in Catholicism as well. So it's just what we grow up with and get used to. And I was talking to our teacher once about one of the statues here, and you know I said it's hard for me to connect with some of the ritual and statues and things. He said, "Well, you guys at Christmas time put up this tree with these lights on it. I can't figure that out either." And I said, "Well, all right." You know, he didn't say it quite like that, but you know, basically, it creates a sensation, a feeling that they connect to. And as you get more and more into studying some of this, these images and things will make sense. They all have meaning. I mean, if you look at these tankas, which are the things on a wall, each of those little things have some sort of meaning. We have this beautiful stupa outside that was built not too long ago. There's also some smaller stupas over here too, which stupas signify knowledge. And that one out there is stuffed with all sorts of mantras and ground cedar and incense, and it's just packed full of things. And it also has a complete set of the teachings that you see. These going up and around are all the teachings, Buddhist teachings that have been passed down. Everything is referenced back to the original teaching. So there's quite a few of them there, but there's a set of these in that stupa as well. And the teachings are considered, so Buddha is here, the teachings are higher, because the word, the knowledge, is considered the most important. So it's kind of set up there. And we won't go into, there is the system doesn't have a creator God, but they don't deny it's just not needed in this system, it all boils down to. So hopefully we'll kind of understand that a little bit as we go through. There are some books on meditation out here in the bookstore. You're welcome to buy those. The Kathleen McDonald's How to Meditate, that's pretty good. That's kind of the standard one that we use quite a bit. But there's some other ones out there. I'm a fan of a man called Alan Wallace. He's a physicist. And there's a lot of science and Buddhism connections. The Dalai Lama does conferences that combine, you know, Buddhism and science. They have neuroscientists and physicists and healthcare people. And his take is if science ever disproves anything that's demonstrated in Buddhism, that we should go with the science, because that's hard proof, right? But so far, nothing's ever been able to disprove it. So anyway, Alan Wallace, The Attention Revolution, that's a good book too. And there's some other ones. Meditation for Dummies actually is pretty good. Surprisingly, it's written by people that are well known and respected, and they do a very good job of teaching in that, or kind of explaining things too. So that's a good one. All right, let's see. Any questions before we kind of get started here? We're going to go ahead and do just some simple meditations. And I'll give you some general instructions for how we sit typically, and then we'll go into more detail later on. The main thing is if you're sitting on the floor, the ideal thing is to keep your back straight. And then your hands comfortable. And I'll talk more about the little zafus here too. But I guess if you're sitting on the floor, if you sit towards the front of it, the idea with these is you kind of lay your hips forward a little bit, so your knees should be down, and that helps you keep your back straight. So, and then if you're sitting in a chair, just, you know, feet flat on the floor, back straight, whatever, you know, just get comfortable. And then what I'm going to do is we're going to have you just close your eyes for a little bit. And we're going to take some big breaths in and out. Eyes, again, closed if possible. If you find yourself getting sleepy, just you can leave them open a little bit. And then kind of set what we call your motivation. So the idea is that, you know, if you're going to do something, you have to think about doing it and set your motivation for doing it. So think about, you know, you're here to make, for whatever reason you just gave when we went around the room, just kind of get that in your mind. And just kind of observe your breath. And you're not going to do anything wrong. We'll talk more about that too. I want you to think about where your body is touching the ground. Might be your feet, might be your behind. And just focus on the sensation of your body part on the ground. And think about it being grounded. You know, if your feet are on the floor, think of your like roots coming out of your feet and solidly grounding you to the ground. And notice the sensation, the feeling. And then slowly come up and begin thinking about your ankles and your calves. And think about every body part as we kind of go. And get your feet to relax. Your calves, your lower legs to relax. Think about any sensation you have in your legs. Move on up to your thighs. Think about that. Get those to relax. your pelvis. Move on up to your abdomen and your lower back. Notice any sensation or tenseness or tension. And then you come on up to your chest, your upper back. Any tension, just let that relax as well. Then your shoulders. Then your upper arms. Notice any tension. Notice any sensation you might have. Allow that to relax. Your elbows and forearms. Then down to your wrist, your hand. Think about each finger. Allowing the body part just kind of settle in, relax. Now go back up to your upper shoulders. Your neck. Feel the tension from your neck just kind of melt away. Come on up to your jaw. Any tension in your face, your eyes, forehead, ears, and actually your scalp, top of your head, everything just relaxed. Now go back and picture your brain actually relaxing. Your sinuses, all the organs on the inside, your throat and tongue. Come on down inside your throat, your lungs, and your heart. Just picture them relaxing as well. Your breathing is just natural, but very relaxed. And then picture your organs, internal organs, relaxing. Your abdomen, all the organs in your abdomen, your pelvis. Picture all the inside, the arteries, and everything inside your legs is relaxing. Moving on back down to your calves, even the bones. And then back down to your feet. There's no tension at all. Now, while you're sitting there, totally relaxed, focus on your breath. Allow it to just flow in and out without effort, a very natural rhythm. You might feel the sensation of the air going in, cool air coming in your nose, and warm air going out. or sometimes you can focus on the rise and fall of your abdomen as the air goes in and out. Now I want you to start counting your breath. Inhale and exhale is one breath. Inhale and exhale is two. And as you count the breath, remain focused on counting. If your mind drifts off, which it will, gently pull it back to the breath and begin counting again from one. When your mind drifts, don't get frustrated or angry with yourself. Gently pull your mind back and begin counting at one again. If your mind has drifted off, gently pull it back. Now slowly bring your mind back to the room, and we'll open our eyes. All right. I was going to ring the bell, but I didn't tell anybody about the bell, so I didn't want to scare anybody. Usually I'll do this. That means, come on back. All right, how was that? It was pretty uneventful. Was that good? Anybody want to share any experience that they had with that? Yes, sir.
I felt like I've never felt before.
Well, that's good. How good. Good.
I have a really hard time clearing my mind.
Uh-huh.
I'll run through my head what I have to do that day.
Sure.
Go to school or this and that at work. And that was really amazing. I didn't think of anything at all.
Good for you.
And I actually forgot where I was. And
oh, wow. Okay, good, good. Other experiences? Anybody uncomfortable?
I always feel like I just woke up.
You do now?
Yeah.
Or you did? Yeah, good. I think. Is that...
I fall asleep. I know that.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Sunday, you wake up, you have nothing to do. You just lay there. And, you know, during the week, you wake up, and you got to go, 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 go.
Right.
Go wherever you're going, but on a weekend, like a very bright, sunny, the sun's up, like 9 o'clock in the morning. You just lay there and think. That's all.
Oh, good, good. All right. Anybody else have anything? Anybody have any... Uncomfortable? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I wouldn't call it uncomfortable, but I've counted the floor about 10 times.
Okay.
I was finding myself getting to that, oh, I'm counting 1, 2, 3, and then drift to something, and go, oh, wait, no, it's 1.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
All right. Was that frustrating?
No, I didn't feel frustrated. Just I know how busy it is up here.
Yeah, okay. Very good. Torch? Yeah. Okay. You don't, but you don't know what you're thinking about.
I'm not thinking about anything.
Okay. Okay. Are you still following your breathing? Okay. All right. That's not necessarily a bad thing. And we'll talk about different types of meditation. Some of them we want to stay highly focused and we want to concentrate. And then others, we kind of just create this big open space that we just have this open sense of awareness. Okay. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll kind of talk about both those and that may have fallen into one of those experiences. Anybody else? Anybody have a hard time sitting and found that maybe on the floor, if it's the first time or if you haven't spent a lot of time sitting on a pillow sometimes? It does.
It hurts, and I have to adjust. It doesn't necessarily pull me out of it, but I know it would be easier if I sat in a chair.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess there's a benefit to sitting like this.
Probably is. It's probably what you're most comfortable with. It can be very uncomfortable sitting on the floor for any length of time, the first time you start doing this, but it does get better. Okay. Right. Yeah, yeah. And you know, I used to have trouble with my legs falling asleep. So that was something I have to, but that goes away too. So might take a while, might take a couple years, but it'll go away. Any other thing? Anybody else have any experience they want to share? Yes, sir. Yeah. Oh, good. Well, I don't know. Is that good? Yeah. Everything. Yeah. Nothing goes unnoticed. You know, we don't think about the stuff on the inside sometimes so much. All right. Well. So the idea there, we did a body scan, which is kind of a, I don't want to say it's analytical, it's a visualization meditation. And then the other part of that was the counting of the breath, and that's a different type of meditation where we're trying to stay focused on something. And what typically happens when we try to focus is we become unfocused, and our mind will drift. And it might be that heater kicked on. We have a train that will come by sometime probably during the night, and that's real distracting for people. So there's different things that pull our heads away. It might be the shopping list or the to-do list or whatever it might be, but there's different things that draw us away. And the idea is to let go of that, let it go, and we'll do some things to practice that and bring our mind back to our breath. And if you think about the meditation, I use an analogy like physical exercise because I think that helps for some people. We don't think about exercising our brain the same way we do exercising our body, but there are a lot of similarities. When you start out exercising, let's say lifting weights, you know, you start out with something light, relatively light, and you wait until you get stronger. But, you know, the first few make an effort. And then as you get stronger, you do what? You add more weight to it, right? And you increase the number. So people will sometimes get frustrated because their mind will wander, but the exercise is catching it and bringing it back. If you picture that process of, oh, I'm off focus, come back, that's like one rep, all right? So you have to kind of be gentle and just kind of keep working that, and that length of time will gradually increase that you can begin to focus more and more on your breathing and stay focused. And again, we'll talk more about that. The idea is to build up our ability to concentrate. And then at some point, we're going to concentrate on something. And that's they call that analytical meditation or Vipassana. So we'll find something that we'll drill in on once we begin to develop that strength in our concentration. So, but a lot of people will say, well, I get frustrated because I can't keep my mind focused on my breathing. But that's the point, is you catch yourself and bring it back. Okay? Does that make sense? The other thing, I did a class at Dillon a couple years back. And we always start out with about 6 to 8 kids, and we end up quickly with about three or four, because they all have something better they decide they want to do than sit. But after the first meditation was like that, just counting your breathing, one of the kids said, well, when's it going to happen? And I said, well, when's what going to happen? He said, isn't something supposed to happen? I said, no, this is as good as it's going to get. That's why he never came back after that. But so don't expect a flash of something to occur or whatever. It's in the beginning, it can be real just boring. And I hate to say that, but it's just a matter of we're strengthening our mind and building up. It's actually some neuroplasticity going on there. There's some things changing in our brain as we begin to focus. And we'll find over time, as you practice this more and more, and some of the other meditations we'll talk about, your ability to focus will increase. And your ability to, something comes in your head that bothers you, you'll be able to just let it go, you know? And that when you can start doing that, then you start to really see some real benefits from it. So, you know, because right now that thought that comes in our head, we meditate on that, you know. We're meditating on something all the time. So it's either something negative, something we're worried about that's going to happen, something that did happen, whatever. Our mind's always somewhere else. John Kabat-Zinn says, in our life we have two choices. We can either be mindful or mindless. That's the only two choices we have. And about most of the time, we're just being mindless. You know, we're just kind of going through our regular routine. So, and I said, you can't do this wrong. There's no way. There is no doing it wrong. It's just a matter of doing it. That's where the exercise comes in. So anybody have any questions or comments or things they're worried about or they want to leave? No, not necessarily. When you just keep going. Yeah, you just keep going. You can do that. The idea is to maintain focus on that breath, okay? And we'll have another one here. Well, actually, one of the ones in the homework you can do, which is you just focus on the breath rising and falling. You're not necessarily counting, but your mind is focused on the breath going up. You watch it as it changes over and come back down, and go back up again. So, but the idea of counting is to maintain the concentration. So, other questions? Yes, sir. Yeah, we'll talk about that. Actually, I think we'll talk about that now. So, I'll talk about a few other things first. The idea. Meditation, gom is a term that is a Tibetan term or Sanskrit term for meditation. It means to become familiar. This actually room is called a gompa, which is a meditation room. So gom means become familiar. And what we're becoming familiar with is our own mind, and something that most people, interestingly enough, we don't think about our own minds too much. We think we have thoughts that come up in our mind. With some effort, we can kind of stand off the side and see, oh, that's a thought. Okay, and that's the kind of thing that we're going to kind of build up. Our brains, the human brain has, you know, the ability to think things, but it also has the ability to observe the thought process. Okay, does that make sense? And we can make adjustments to that process with some exercise, which is really what the whole idea is. The first step is becoming familiar with it. So we seek to become more familiar with our own minds. We know, we think we know the world around us pretty well. As anybody, well, I don't, you know, is that a fair statement? I mean, we think we have a pretty good handle on things for the most part. We know reality, right? But in truth, we know our own reality, and our own realities differ from everybody else's, because our reality is everything that we've carried up to this point, everything we've learned, everything we've been exposed to, everything we've thought. All of those things kind of form our framework for reality. And we typically don't question that much, you know. We assume that that's right. That's reality as far as we're concerned. So part of what we'll do is, as we become familiar with our thoughts, we can begin to question some of those thoughts that come in our head. Like, why did I think that? And is that true? Let's see. Let me give you an example. How many of you walk, when you walk in a grocery store, I make a conscious effort of thinking about doing this now, but you walk down a grocery store, every person you see, a thought comes into your head of, oh, I know what that person is, I know who that person is. You know, we know, we make up stories about these people as soon as we see them. People, complete strangers, right? We've done exercise, we do some organizational development work, we have a PowerPoint thing that will throw up 20 pictures, we have 20 different people. You know, we have infants, we have old people, we have Bush, we have Obama, we have poor people, rich people, people with punked, you know, spiked hair, tattoos. So we just kind of go through these pictures real quickly. And everybody, if they watch it, as soon as that picture comes up, a thought comes in their head about that person. I know that person, you know. We have a story. We start right away. We don't ever question those stories for the most part. We hold those stories to be true. And from that, we build all sorts of prejudices and unreal ideas about people, even before we know them, right? So, and we typically don't question that. We get some of that from our parents or from our exposures growing up or our religion or whatever the case may be, our culture. But we see that, and we know it to be true. And there's other things that are like that all the time. There's stories that we make up about people, what if they like us, they don't like us. That's a big one. How can we get them to like us? How can we get them to not like us? We have friends, enemies. We have all of these different stories that we make up about things. Anybody on 440 on the way here today? And do anybody get cut off by somebody? What story did you make up about that person? You know? Ah, person's been planning since this morning to cut me off on that road. You know, you think about where road rage comes. I mean, it's that thought that we take. We take that seed of that thought, and we begin playing that story over and over and over again until it becomes huge. You know? That's what the kids do, the people in prison. Most of them are incarcerated because of some outcropping of anger. Right? That became rage and something happened. A lot of them are. But if we trace that thought back, it starts out with just a thought, a subtle little seed thought of irritation. And irritation leads to frustration, and frustration leads to anger, and anger leads to rage if we don't bottle that in. Which is the same thing that happens on the highway, right? When we cut somebody off. But how many of you think, maybe that person just got laid off work and they're on their way home to tell their parent or tell their family that they're unemployed, and you know, we don't have this natural tendency to develop a story of compassion for people. Our tendency, and we're kind of hardwired to do this, is the fight or flight thing, right? Is we always have some negative story. We're like Velcro for the negative and Teflon for the positive. It takes some effort. But if you begin to change that story, how many of you cut somebody off on a road before? Was it intentional? What did you start thinking from the beginning of the morning, I'm going to find this guy on the way home and cut him off? Right? It was usually something mindless. Right? And, oh, there's the exit. Something. And sometimes I'll give a timid little sorry, you know, cut somebody off. What's going through their head? What story is it, you know? Yeah, jerk, jerk. We don't see that. We know the real story. They don't know the real story. Or at a stoplight, you know, when the guy behind you, as soon as the light turns red, toots their horn. You know, what kind of story do we make about that? I've been in a hurry to get somewhere. Someone's sick. Something's going on, you know. So anyway, we have this schema, this framework of things that we typically don't question. And so through some of these practices, we begin to question those things. And then we can begin to change the stories. And once we begin to change the stories, everything around us begins to change. When we start having compassion for the person that cuts you off, it's a whole different world out there now, you know. And we have the power within us to do that. That's where people, I think people sometimes struggle because they don't think, they're so firm on their stories that they don't think they can change them because they just know that they're true. So the first step is seeing the thought arise, which is what the concentration or the breathing meditations do. We see, oh, I lost count. Come back again. Or, oh, here comes that thing called anger. You know, we'll feel it. You actually physically could feel it before you might catch the thought, you know. Hopefully you feel it before you actually do something stupid. But, you know, sometimes some of the kids in prison and the adults, they didn't do that. So we see these thoughts as they arise. We try to catch them, and then we can redirect them. That's ultimately what we want to try to do. So I kind of got off on a bit of a thing there. So the meditation allows us to get acquainted with our inner world and begin watching our thoughts. The Buddhists, particularly all of the kind of Eastern, they include emotions with thoughts. I think in the West we tend not to do that. We think thought, at least I did. Anybody else like that? A thought is illogical, right? A thought is math. Emotion is something we kind of, it's kind of squishy. We don't worry too much about that. We don't teach that in school. I mean, a lot of times we expect people to learn their emotional side at home, maybe in church, through family or something else. But we don't typically think teaching kids contentment and patience and some of these kind of virtues that we expect people. We put them on posters on a wall, right? But we don't help people understand what those are. So in Buddhist philosophy, an emotion is a thought as well. And it's just as powerful, probably more so a lot of times than a logical thought, because we're often controlled by our emotions. So we're going to drill in on those. That's a really important aspect. And I think that's, again, something that we don't typically think about. So, I have to make sure I don't miss things. I kind of veer off a little bit. Anybody have any questions or comments or anything? Does that make sense, what I said? Okay. All right, so the purpose is to, again, become familiar with our minds. It's not just relaxation. That often comes with it, but it's different than just simple relaxation. So we know it's important we begin to kind of think of, we'll talk more about this, finding a place to do meditation. So make this like you would exercise, you know, make this we're going to set up a special place somewhere. It might be just a seat at home or a cushion if you have one or whatever it might be, someplace comfortable where you can actually practice this. And we're going to try to get in the habit of doing it on a daily basis. might start out, I didn't do a very good job of keeping time on that last one. I'm thinking I went about 3 or 4 minutes, 3 minutes maybe after the body scan we started counting the breathing. So, you know, if you can do a few minutes to start with, that's fine. Ideally, you begin working up more and more. And you begin to develop a desire to sit, you know, and that's real. When you start, kind of cross into that from, oh, I've got to do this to, I want to do this, or if I don't do it, I miss it. Anybody exercise here regularly? That if you don't do it, what happens? You start feeling, bleh, yeah. So, you know, you might go a day or two. This will become the same kind of habit if you can. So, you know, try to develop that kind of habit as much as possible. And like I said, the real purpose is to kind of slowly, it's a slow exercise. It's like, you know, you're not going to go into the gym one day and then expect to go home and, you know, look a whole lot different than you did the day before. It's the same way. Our minds are going to take a long time, and it's a gradual process that we have to just keep working with. I had a little story I'll read. This is from there's a good book out there called Buddha's Brain. I think a guy's name is Henson that wrote it. A physician, and I think he's a neurologist, but he talks about mindfulness and meditation and practicing. And he says these stages of growth that we'll go through, and you'll gradually see, you know, people around you might notice the difference before you do. Your world will start calming down a little bit, but people might notice a slight difference in the way you're acting over a period of time. First, it might throw people off a little bit, so be prepared for that, you know, if you continue to do this practice. One of the members here was talking about she started meditating a lot more and more, and her and her sister never got along, so it was kind of a standard thing at Thanksgiving, there was going to be some sort of fight. And one year she just finally decided she was going to let it go. And her sister threw her sister off. Aren't you gonna pick a fight? You know, what's the matter? Nothing. I just decided it's not worth it. So it changed their relationship. But anyway, this Buddha's Brain, he talks about four stages. So stage one, these are examples. Stage one, after you're practicing, you're caught in a second, he calls them second dart reactions. We have the initial thought, and then we kind of start building that, right? The negative thing. So you're caught in a second dart reaction and you don't realize it. Your partner forgets to bring milk home and you complain angrily without seeing that your reaction is over the top. That might be where some of us are right now. Stage two, you realize you've been hijacked by greed or hatred in the broadest sense that cannot help yourself. Internally, you're squirming, but you can't stop grumbling bitterly about there not being milk. Stage three, some aspect of the reaction arises, but you don't act it out. You feel irritated, but remind yourself that your partner does a lot for you already, and getting cranky will just make things worse. And then stage four, the reaction doesn't even come up. Sometimes you forget you ever had the issue. You understand there's no milk. You calmly try to figure out what you're going to do now. You know? So it's a gradual thing. Our stories begin to kind of lose their power, our negative stories. And we can begin to replace them with more positive kind of stories. The other note I had that I want to say is when, you know, people, like I said, will sometimes get frustrated because they think that, as they practice, they find these thoughts arise and then they begin to think, oh, I'm an angry person. I've got all these negative thoughts that keep popping up in my head. Well, what happens is, it's like anything else. Once you begin something like this, those thoughts have always been there. They've always popped up. But once you become aware of them, it just seems like it's going to be intensified. Does that make sense? You're going to notice the things that you didn't notice before. And that sometimes is not a comfortable feeling. But just remind yourself, these have always been there, I've just never recognized them before. Okay? All right. Somebody say something. Anything. Okay, good. I need to know we're heading in the right direction. Thank you. I talked about metacognition, neuroplasticity. Anybody here interested in that? Neurology, that's getting a big deal. I had most of an undergraduate degree in psychology, and I switched, and I ended up getting a degree in nursing instead. But I think if I had it to do again, neuroscience would probably be the direction. It seems like that's where psychology is headed, right? We're seeing more and more interest. And I think it's this wonderful thing. We've done some amazing things and have discovered some wonderful things that go on in our brain that correlate very closely to what these teachings are all about. So, and again, that's Dalai Lama does a lot of work with neuroscientists and physicists, and they try to explore this stuff together. So sometimes I'll do an exercise with a group where you all have seen the mazes, right? Where you kind of draw a pencil, you start from the beginning, go to the end. So I'll do a maze for people. And, I'll say, all right, we're going to get go, and I'll time you when we're done. Put your pencils down, put your hands up, whatever. And it might take a minute and a half, 2 minutes for people to get through that maze. And then I say, all right, now flip the paper over. On the other side is the exact same maze. And I say, all right, we're going to do it again. And this time it might take up 30 seconds to get through it. I give them another one, the exact same maze. What do you think is going to happen? How long do you think it'll take people to get through it third time? 10 seconds, yeah, I mean, it's 10, 20 seconds real quick. We keep doing it, and finally it's just one movement, right? That is what's happening. That's neuroplasticity. The first time we get through that maze, it's a struggle. Oh, that didn't make it. Back up here, go there. The second time, it's much easier. The third time, it's much easier. And finally, it just becomes a habit. Everything you've ever learned has been like that, okay? I have a new grandson, and they're just starting to feed him. I'm seeing him try to pick things up, He's only like 5 months old, and it's struggling. But it's cute as all get out to watch him try to get this. But I know what's going on in his head, the exact same thing as that maze. He's trying to coordinate all of this stuff together, And at some point, you watch a kid eat for the first time, it's hilarious. At some point, we reach a point in our lives where we don't even think about eating, right? How many of you were very mindful about the car ride here tonight? Or were you thinking about other things or making a phone call or doing whatever? We have gotten so good, these things are just habits, right? So that maze is what happens in our brain. We created a new neurological network of nerve cells that have connected together, and they begin firing just in that pattern. They've got it, right? If I wait 3 months or a year or whatever and hear that same maze, that stuff will kind of fade away a little bit. It'll take me a little while to get it the first time, but it'll kind of come back pretty quickly. So as we practice these meditations, as we practice changing that person who cut us off, right, that is already wired in there, and we have to make effort to make up the story about why that guy, some story of compassion for this person. And when we do that the first time, it's going to be like going through that maze. It's going to be an effort, and our habit is to go to the negative, right? So we have to force that kind of story, and it'll get easier and easier and easier. And then like the milk thing, it just becomes, it's like, yeah, all right, what's next? We just learn to let go of that anger or whatever that irritation might be. Please. What do you think? Well, you said, right. Oh, that's right. There was Torrance that said that. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. Do you think there's a connection to that? Okay. So happiness is a learned process, right? We've got to get being unhappy out of the way, or letting go of that kind of stuff. And that's a learned thing too. We're relearning new habits and trying to let those old habits fade into the background like a maze that we haven't done for 3 years, right? So, and there really is. Yes, sir, I'm sorry. And then you forget all about. Yeah, that's right. We just kind of, it kind of drifts right in the background until something brings it back up in the foreground too. So yeah, this is a matter of relearning things. And there's actually, it's called the Hibbian theory. Neurologically, we create these patterns. The guy uses the example of sheep on a path, you know, going from one pasture to the next. The more they walk it, the more clear the path becomes, right? It keeps getting worn down, and they'll keep going on the same path because it's right there. So the process just reinforces it. Does that make sense? So that's what we're doing with a lot of the things that we're currently dealing with. So that's what we're going to hope to gain, is just the understanding the basic exercises that will allow us to kind of work through some of this stuff. But again, it is going to take some practice. All right, posture. I said I'd get back to this. So the idea behind the posture is making sure that you're comfortable. Okay, you want to. Not be focused on your leg that's fallen asleep or this or that or whatnot. And as you get better with this, some of the discomfort, you'll be able to meditate on the sensation that's discomfort and kind of let that go. You know, that's one of the things you might be able to practice. They do meditation. Kabat-Zinn did a lot of it for people with chronic pain, right? So that's where a lot of the research was initially. And he found it to be very effective. So we're going to sit in a way that's comfortable. We want to also sit in a way that allows us to stay alert. That's going to be one of the obstacles that we're going to face is sleepiness. You know, so we're going to have to kind of battle that monster. He's going to come up. Comes up for me big time. So we want to be able to stay alert. So if a chair works out good for you, that's fine. If the floor works out good for you, if you have to move back and forth, that's fine too. And in over the next few weeks, if you come back, if you feel like you have to go in the middle of a meditation from the floor to the chair, by all means do it. You know, don't feel like that's something you can't do. The cushion, I think I mentioned, I usually use two. But I'm not as limber as a lot of people are. So the idea with the cushion is to sit towards the front of it so that your knees are down a little bit and it kind of tilts your pelvis forward, and that kind of helps you keep your back straight. So there's seven different things that we think about when we get in our position. The clothing is the other thing I mentioned. Wear something, you know, comfortable that you can get in that's relatively loose or whatever, not too tight. So the seven position, the 7 points, think of, we have your legs, so your feet are either on the floor or you're sitting on your cushion, okay, so your base, kind of, if you will. And then the back needs to be straight. I picture it like a stack of coins, you know. There should be kind of a natural curve to it, but try to make your spine as straight as possible. If you're sitting in a chair, it's a good idea not to lean against the backrest of the chair, but to kind of sit towards the front of the chair a little bit, and that helps you kind of keep your back straight. Your hands, they typically say, well, your shoulders, the traditional Buddhist is to allow some air to circulate. I guess it was always hot, so kind of, you know, open up there a little bit. Your hands, traditional posture would be your right hand in your left hand with your thumbs touching, okay? And the thumbs signify compassion and wisdom. Those are the two wings of the bird that they'll talk about in Buddhism. But and otherwise, you know, they can be on your knees or just in your lap. Whatever way is comfortable is fine. The top of your head, I like picture a little string holding it up like a marionette. So my crown, the crown should be up a little bit, and the jaw should be forward just a little bit. Your tongue goes at the roof of your mouth, behind your front teeth, and that's actually to allow saliva to run back and to keep you from drooling. So that's always handy. And then your eyes are either closed or slightly open. And if I keep them open, I like to focus on a point as much as possible. Okay? And we'll remind you about those 7 points whenever we do kind of a meditation. We did talk a little bit about mindfulness versus concentration. We'll do some mindfulness exercises. Are you all familiar with that? Everybody's probably heard that term, mindfulness. What do you think the difference between mindfulness and concentration is? Okay. All right. Okay, very good. Yeah, so we're going to use both of those, and we'll do some meditations that have us looking at a wide open sky or the ocean, and then we're going to do some that are focused on like our breath or the counting and stuff like that. You can be mindful. You should try to be mindful all the time. So I'll challenge you. I'll give you a little homework. Try to, on the way home, be very mindful of your driving. Okay? Try to leave the radio off if you can. Not to think about what you're going to do when you get home. Not even think about this class. You know, don't make any phone calls, which isn't a good idea anyway. But, you know, just try to be focused on your driving. Feel your hands on the wheel. Be aware of the cars around you. Be aware of your speed. Be very aware and mindful of everything having to do with driving. And see how that feels. We'll talk about that. If you remember to do it, we'll talk about it next time when you come back and ask how it goes. Sometimes I'll put a little sticky on the dashboard that says, be mindful, just to kind of think about it. It'll change your drive home. It'll be different than what it would normally be if you try that. And I think you'll find it'll be in a positive way. So, how many of you have driven someplace and end up, you're like, well, why did I come here? I wasn't coming here. I came to the wrong place. Yeah.
I didn't remember a big gap. I was obviously driving.
It's scary. You're still here.
Somebody was paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Remember, now, juxtapose that against the first time you drove a car. You know? We've lost that. That was like the baby eating for the first time, right? But now it's so mindless. It's just a thing. It's a thing that we do. So yeah, in one of the classes I did, we had an off-site meeting and they went to work instead. And they said, I ended up pulling in the parking lot and saying, what am I doing here? You know, just a whole different place. So try to be mindful of your drive home. We'll see how that works. So mindfulness and concentration, will work on those two. All right, we're going to do one more meditation here for this evening. It's called the bare tension meditation, and this is going to be similar to the counting of the breath. So when we first started counting, I said picture or think of the air going in to your nostrils, warm or cool air coming in, warm air going out, or feel the rise and fall of your abdomen. Did you try both of those or one of them or something more comfortable than the other? Maybe didn't think about it too much. You might gravitate towards one or the other. So you pick whichever one works the best. Okay, I kind of focus on my abdomen, but everybody's a little bit different. So, all right, and the idea too is be aware when your mind has wandered off, gently bring it back. It's kind of like the gatekeeper, right? Oh, there it goes. Bring it back. All right, so let's get, if you're on a cushion, you know, your base down. If you're in a chair, feet flat on the floor. Back straight, arms out, open a little bit, hands in your lap. Top your head up a little, chin down, tongue at the roof of your mouth, behind your front teeth, and eyes closed or slightly opened. And I'll ring the bell when we're done, okay? And we'll start out with a couple of big breaths just in and out and just kind of let a real quick kind of body scan, but you might picture, when you breathe in, picture pure light going in and envision it going in your lungs and traveling around your bloodstream. And as you exhale, picture all the negativities and impurities coming out of your lungs like soot and just dissipating into the space. Okay? And we'll do a few breaths like that. And once your mind settles a little bit, just focus on your breathing. When your mind wanders, gently bring it back. How did we do? Anybody's mind drift? Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Counting was easy. Yeah. But, you know, think back about the counting. Some people count, and I'm not saying this happened, but some people can count and still think about something else, you know? So when you do the counting, ask yourself, am I really focused? Because you should be focused on the breath in between the counts. So. You did that better, just bear attention? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
One, two, yeah.
Yeah, okay. You were going to say something? Everything is okay. Right? I'm not going to tell you anything's not okay yet. There's going to be something that's not okay. But the idea is just to focus on the breath, and just the count is a place mark. Okay? So, yeah, if you start having, if the numbers are dancing around and stuff, you're kind of, I'll do that sometimes, you know, I get, so, but other things? No. No. That's like one. No, that's not it. Yeah, no need to be embarrassed. You know, it's funny because the monks and stuff that have been doing this for years and years still struggle with the same obstacles, you know. So that's just part of it. And we'll talk about things. You know, begin to notice, if you're going to do this at home, and again, I really, you know, really encourage you to try to get in the habit of doing it, just if it's a couple of minutes, you know. You'll try the best time of day. I have to do it in the morning. You know, I have to do it early in the morning. At night, I don't have that ability to do that. This class is good for me because it makes me do it in the evening. And I feel pretty good going home, but normally I wouldn't do it this time of day. I just have too much trouble. Now I do it at 4:30 in the morning. That's for some people is a hard time to begin thinking about stuff too. But
that's what I wonder too, is using it to help with insomnia, because I don't have any problem falling asleep, but two or three times a week I'll wake up way too early.
Yeah. Right.
Immediately the wheels will start turning.
Yeah. It's good. So the idea is, well, it's good and it's bad. So we're letting go of, we're learning to kind of let go of some of those things, right? That time in the morning, I have the same problem. That time in the morning, those thoughts pop in your head and you start going on something. And it's just near impossible to let go of. But if you can practice on just letting go of that thought, get back to focus. You might even lay and there's a body scan you can do at night. The same one, basically. Start at the bottom, come all the way up, go all the way back in. Picture, you know, I picture my limbs becoming like concrete. You know, just sinking into the mattress, and your organs and everything just kind of sinking down. And it's like the what they call it in yoga, the death pose or something, laying down, corpse pose. Thank you. And you can use that to kind of drift back off again. Now the downside of that is don't make that your meditation practice, because there's our train. because you'll get in the habit of when you go to do the meditate, you're just going to fall asleep. Yeah. So, you know, if you need that as a relaxation tool, that's fine. But I would also encourage you to find a time when you're awake and alert to practice these kind of things. So, make sense? All right. And again, if you can find a spot, sometimes it helps people to find, you know, find a little corner, find a special chair, some kind of place set up. that you can begin to kind of focus on. Make it a place comfortable, a place that you like to be. And, you know, if you want to put some pictures of people or whatnot, that's really all this is all about, is you begin to set up things that, you know, make you feel good, and you can practice that. These today were concentration meditations, yeah, yeah. But, you know, on your drive home, you don't want to be focusing on accounting or breathing, but be mindful of what's going on around you. And you can do mindfulness practice all the time. You know, you can do it when you eat. They have a mindfulness eating class here. I can't remember what they call it. I don't know if anybody's been to that. Denise Flora teaches it. So, you know, that's a therapeutic dietary thing, is you just be real aware of what you're putting in your mouth. We will do them. I'll do them with like a Hershey Kiss or something like that. You know, just be focused on that. That's, yeah, mindful of what's going on there. So, yeah, you can be mindful all the time, brushing your teeth, taking a shower. Most of the time or not. Kabat-Zinn has an interesting little story. He says, when you're taking a shower, the next time you're taking a shower, you know, your mind might be at the meeting you're about to go to. And then before you know it, the whole meeting is in the shower with you. You know, instead of sitting there and feeling the water run and really focusing on taking a shower or whatever it is, you can be mindful of that. That's a good practice, too. So, red lights. I use red lights. That's a thing for me. All right. This is a time to practice for a couple of minutes. Just be real mindful. So pick something, too. Other questions? I'm sorry, I'm holding this over here. I wasn't going to do that. Take just a second. Think about what you could have done tonight, but you chose to come here. You know, you made a conscious decision to come here, so that gets you moving in the right direction, you know. And you learned something tonight. Hopefully you learned something that will help you somewhere down the road. You know, even if it's not a practice you develop, at least you've got some things. So you've started helping yourself and all the people around you. You really have by stepping into this practice. So, okay. Everybody be careful going home.